And it's a request for you to try and speak louder or closer to the mic. Salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. All praises are Allah's, Lord of the worlds. And may His peace and blessings be upon our Master, the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and His pure Immaculate Ahlul Bayt.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad
wa ala Muhammad wa ajal wa ajal. Last night, we started with a tradition from the Holy Messenger that read, Ma min mawludin illa yuladu ala al-fitra fa'abawahu yuhawwadanihi aw yunassiranihi aw yumajjisani. That no newborn is born save that it is born based on the fitra, the fitra. And that it's the parents, very loosely translated as parents for now, that make the newborn either Jewish, Christian, or Zoroastrian. We're going to analyze certain parts of this tradition. Last night, we almost finished explaining what the fitra was, that it was a dimension of man preceding the physical creation of man, but it's a precedence in hierarchy, not in time. And then we linked it to alam adhar. Just one or two points, just to summarize. Someone may ask, what's the relationship between the fitra and the spirit that arises on physical creation? The answer there maybe is that the relationship between the fitra and the spirit, the ruh, is the same as the relationship between nature and the physical body. That's one point. The next point was that the fitra is used in opposition to being Jewish, Christian, or Zoroastrian. And that was an important point to realize, that the fitra is tantamount to Islam, especially in the verse Inna Dina Inda Allah in Islam, and on a par with Tawheed. And we spoke about that. And finally, we ended here that Imam Khomeini, alayhi salam, rahmatullah alayhi, says that all religions are, and we said all religions are Islam, at which Nabi Musa brought, Nabi Isa brought, and so on and so forth. It's all Islam, but the degree of manifestation, we said, differs. All religions are inviting man to absolute perfection. That's the goal. Now, this is a very important point. And when you discuss with a non-Muslim, it has to start from here. If you start off with the texts, it's going to be difficult speaking with a non-Muslim. Because everyone is after perfection. No one can say, I'm not looking for perfection. If they do, it's abnormal. What they find perfection in, they may err, but everyone is after absolute perfection. Now, all religions are inviting man to absolute perfection. So here with your rationality, you can look how Tawheed is presented, how Qiyamah, resurrection, is presented, and then see for yourselves which one is more perfect. Although Christianity, Judaism, Zoroastrian, they're distorted forms of Islam. It's still Islam, but it's distorted. you speak of Christianity, Judaism, when it says Judaism, Christianity, well, there's a degree of distortion, automatic, in this term. However, there are elements of Islam that are still preserved in these distorted religions. So there's no room for complacency. One never knows what can happen. There's a reason why some people will be attracted to the 12th Imam before us, people who are non-Muslim. The fitrah is on a par with Islam. Remember that. You can analyze for yourselves how Tawheed is presented in previous religions and how Tawheed is presented in Islam. It's a rational endeavor. And then even within Islam, within the different sciences of Islam, we see different tendencies of Tawheed, different tendencies of Qiyamah. But it's important that there is a difference. Yes, the Sharia says believe in one God, that's the minimum, accept it. Yeah, you're a Muslim, you're a Muwahid, but still, that doesn't mean Tawheed is finished. There are much more higher degrees of Tawheed. To think that just believing in one God, that's it, that's a bit simple. There are many forms of Tawheed. There's the numerical form of Tawheed, and there's the Samadhi form of Tawheed. These are different. They're based on different worldviews. Someone may believe that there's Allah, and there's nothing else. And then Allah, from that nothing else, from non-existence, creates. That's how they see creation. Others find fault with this, because they see this is not perfect. This is a deficient God which is portrayed. They want something higher. They're looking for something higher. And I'll explain about Tawheed in some depth in 2 or 3 days' time. Or in the Qiyamah, for example, resurrection, the verse in the Holy Quran reads, يَعْلَمُونَ ظَاهِرًا مِنَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا وَهُمْ أَنِ الْآخِرَةِ هُمْ غَافِلُونَ. Many people, they just accept the outside, the outer dimension of the physical realm of existence. In relation to Akhirah, they are ghafil, heedless, oblivious. Akhirah is used in opposition to the outside dimension of the physical realm of existence. It means that Akhirah is the inner dimension of this physical realm of existence. It's a very important point here, but even more important, these people are ghafil in relation to Akhirah. They are heedless in relation to Akhirah. They are heedless in relation to the inner dimensions of this physical realm of existence. And whenever you see the term ghafil, heedless, in the Quran, it means that the reality, there is a reality, it exists right now, but you are heedless in relation to it. Some people think Qiyamah will come one day. But according to this verse, Qiyamah exists right now. But you are heedless in relation to it. Heaven and hell exist right now. But you are heedless. Heaven and hell, they're functions of Qiyamah. They exist right now. It existed. إِذَا وَقَعَتِ الْوَاقِعَةِ The event, Qiyamah, has happened. Has happened. So that's a delicate point. وقع is past tense in Arabic. If you take this verse to the Odabo, those who are experts in Arabic literature, they say it's past tense, but since Qiyamah is a definitive reality which is to come, they've used it in the past tense. Otherwise they believe Qiyamah will come one day. It doesn't exist now. It will happen one day. This past tense, because this it will happen one day is definitive, the Arabs use it in past tense. That's what the Ahl al-Zahir say. People who suffice with the superficial sciences. And it's okay, but they're putting religion on credit. Everything will happen one day. Qiyamah will happen one day. The Sirat, one day it will happen. The Mizan, one day. Barzakh, one day. Questioning of the angels, one day. Qiyamah, one day. Idha waqa'at al-waqa. But no, we don't have that right. The Warafah don't have that. They say no. With which right are you translating this verse in the imperfect tense? Or in the future, present tense? When the wording is in the past tense, it's happened. Well, that needs some explanation though, but we'll come to that. It's just the point that we have many verses in the Quran. Or iddat lil muttaqin, in relation to Jannah, it's prepared. It's already prepared for the muttaqin. It already exists. In relation to the fire, or iddat, it's past tense, passive past tense. Or iddat lil kafirin, it's already prepared for the kafirin. Don't say it will happen. It's already here. Okay, it may manifest for you later, but don't say it will come to be later. These two different statements. You're not allowed to play with these verses. Yes, if you can rationally prove that heaven, hell do not exist and it will happen one day, then yes, you can translate these and use these verses allegorically. But until you prove that, you can't. There is no allegorical use. You can't just use it as a first course of action. Anyway, ghafil in relation to X means X exists right now, but you are heedless in relation to it. The point is, even in resurrection, there are different understandings. Rationality. You see how other religions bring forward resurrection. See how Islam brings it and how different Islamic scientists and the different Islamic sciences, they introduce it. You have a right with your aql. Say, no, that's imperfect. That's more perfect than that. The purpose is that we're all after absolute perfection. That tawheed, that fitrah, and it's a dimension of us, we just have to gain access to it. Okay. So we left, that was until last night. Let's continue with the tradition. So no one is born save that they are born based on the fitrah. Then the verse reads, فَأَبَوَاهُ, then their parents, although Ab, we're loosely translating it as parents for now. يُحَوِّدَانِهِ أَوْ يُنَسِّرَانِهِ, it's the parents that make them Jewish or Christian or Zoroastrian. Now, when you look at this holy tradition, the common interpretation is this, that it's the physical parents, the genetic parents, is referred to by the term Abba, or here Abba in the dual sense, not plural but dual, mother and father together, Abba. They say, yes, this is the parents, the genetic parents, the owner of the sperm, owner of the egg, or according to some Fora, the owner of the womb. And it's them, it's these two parents that make the child Jewish or Christian or Zoroastrian. But then we see in the Quran, when it comes to the genetic parents, it specifically uses the term walid and walida, or if you want to use it together, walidain, the offspring being walad. Here, when it comes to genetic parents, the specific Quranic term is walidain. Ab can refer to parents, but Ab has a whole list of other meanings too. And these other meanings have to be taken into mind here. And I want to go through some of them in the Quran and the traditions and try to summarize an important point here. Because the tradition says Abawa, and we use it too. Maybe in Urdu you use it, in Farsi we use it, in Arabic we say, in relation to our genetic parents, we use the term Abawain. Walidain is more accurate, but Abawain is used. In chapter 6, verse 74, إِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ لِأَبِيهِ آذَرْ. Recall when Ibrahim alayhi salam said to his Ab, called Adar. Now here, Ab can't mean father, even though it is one of the meanings of Ab, because the father of Ibrahim alayhi salam, we have it in the text, he was called Taruch. I think another reason why this can't be the genetic father of Ibrahim, because he wasn't Adar, wasn't a monotheist. The fathers of the prophets, they're all monotheists. And that has to be the case. And I think we may have discussed that last year, the rational basis to Ismat al-Infallibility, the rational justification. So recall when Ibrahim said to his father, Adar, أَتَتَّخِذُ أَسْنَوْمَنْ آلِهَا. Do you take idols as gods? إِنِّي أَرَوْكَ وَقَوْمَكَ فِي دَلَالٍ مُبِينٍ. Verily I see you and your people in manifest error. But the point is, this Ab is used in relation to Adar. And we know Adar wasn't the genetic father. The genetic father was Taruch, and also in chapter 14, verse 41, Nabi Ibrahim prays, Rabbana, O Lord, Ighfir li, forgive me, wali walidayya, and my parents. See, walidayya is used here. Wali mu'mineen yawma yaqoomul hisab, and the believers, the day, forgive us all, on the day that accounting is established. So here we see Nabi Ibrahim using waladay. But here Ab is used, and it doesn't mean father here, although it is one of the meanings of Ab. Ab has many other meanings. Foster, uncle, mentor, teacher, nurturer, guide, ancestor, grandfather, all these are used. And many of them are used in the Holy Quran. For example, Ab meaning father, uncle, and grandfather is found in this verse in the Holy Quran, which I don't have the chapter number, sorry about that, but it reads, Kuntum Shuhada'a Idh Hadar Ya'qub al-Mawt Idh Qala Libanihi Ma Ta'buduna Min Ba'di. Were you witness when death approached Ya'qub, Jacob, alayhi salam? And recall when Jacob said to his sons, what will you believe after me? Qalu, the sons replied, Na'abudu, we'll believe Elohaka, in your God, wa Eloha, and the God of Aba'ika. Aba is the plural of Ab. We believe in the God of, in your God, and the God of your Abs. Then who are your, who are the Abs, so to speak? Ibrahim wa Ismail wa Ishaq. Ibrahim, the grandfather of Jacob, alayhi wasalam. Ismail, the uncle of Yaqub. See, all of them qualify as Ab. And Ishaq, the father of Nabi Yaqub, alayhi wasalam. So all of them, we will believe in the God of all these Abs. And here we see Ab qualifies in relation to father, uncle, and grandfather. Then, just at the end, for completion, say, it is Elohan Wahida, one God, Tawheed.
Subhanallah.
And the question is, naturally, the religions they brought too, it was Islam. The religion every prophet brought was Islam. We spoke about that last night. The question is now, can people acquire fana and annihilation in that degree of Islam that they had, that they brought before the people? And then the verse answers, after Elohan Wahida wa nahnu lahu muslimun, and we are in unity to Allah, lahu. The long preposition, the law of unity. لِلَّهِ مَا فِي السَّمَوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. Whatever's in the heavens and earth is in unity with Allah. لَيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى. Man is but that which he strives for. Man is in unity with one's actions. You are your actions. Hear the law too. That we submit in unity to Allah. Muslimun. Islam has degrees, but with this lahu, it's at a high degree where one acquires fana. When we look in the traditions, we see Ab also used in other contexts. The Holy Messenger sallallahu alaihi wa sallam said, Ana wa aliyum abawa. That I and Amir al-Mu'mineen, we are the Ab of this Ummah. They're the ultimate spiritual fathers of the Ummah. They're not the genetic fathers. See how Ab is used here? If it was the genetic sense, it would be Walidain. And then we have a tradition that and each and every one of us, we have three Abs, me and you. Abon, this is another tradition. Abon waladani, waladani. We all have an Ab that procreated us. And that's the genetic father. That's one Ab. Wa abon zawajani. We have a second. It's not genetic. It's the father that gave you your spouse, which means your father-in-law. Wa abun, so your father-in-law also qualifies as Ab. Wa abun alamani. This is the most important. So you have a father, and this is the spiritual father, the mentor, the peer, the sheikh, the one who's taught you. Although a teacher can qualify as that too, primary school teachers, secondary, but knowledge though degrees to it, and the higher and more godly it becomes, this app becomes more important. Wa'abun al-lamani, that was taught me. This is very important. It's more important than the first two. The genetic father, the father-in-law. Why is it more important? Because fatherhood, sonhood, father-in-lawhood, these are arbitrary titles given. In a society where people live in a social manner, these are just titles given. These titles won't exist in the hereafter. In any given society, civil society or any society, we're forced out of necessity to assign arbitrary rules so that we can live more on a par with harmony with one another. So we come and assign rules of ownership, for example, that he is the owner of this if they do X, Y, or Z action. This is the property of him or her if they buy it. We do that so that if there's 10 people and a plot of land, everyone, they would trespass over each other's land if we don't assign something. In any social order, these arbitrary rulings, they exist. Although these arbitrary rulings depend upon natural realities, they're not just willy-nilly propositions, they're based on natural realities. For example, your need of something, your fitri need of something. In a social context, these rules come, but they're arbitrary. Since they're arbitrary, they're non-existent in the hereafter. Because in the hereafter, there is no society as we know of it in this world. There is no social order in the hereafter. It's all you and your actions manifesting. The hereafter is individual in nature. And so, whereas most theologians and maybe some philosophers regard man as a social animal, the theosophers believe that man in reality is an individual animal, it's an individual entity. The fact that he has or she has to act socially, that's out of need. And that's only in this realm of existence, so that they can exercise their needs. And the Sharia, when it speaks, and the Sharia, it's all arbitrary rulings, but it's based on taqwini realities. These arbitrary rulings is for the individual self-betterment of the individual. Because in the hereafter, there is no social order. Fatherhood doesn't exist in the hereafter. Sonhood doesn't exist in the hereafter. Marriage, which is an arbitrary ruling again. That out of need, we have to have this marriage here in an organized way, in a social context. It doesn't exist in the hereafter as it does here. There is marriage, there is fatherhood, sonhood, but not the marriage and fatherhood and sonhood and so on and so forth that we know of in this social order. Just to support these statements, in chapter 1995, وَكُلُّهُمْ آتِيهِ, everyone, each of them, will come to Allah يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ فَرْدًا. they will come to Allah on the day of resurrection individually. Yes, there are some traditions that says majmu'un, they'll all be assembled. Yes, that's correct. You may all be assembled, but there's no ijtima'. There's no social life there. It's all you'll come individually. Or in chapter 18, verses 34 to 36, Yawma yafir yul mar'u, the day when a man, a person, he will evade, will escape from this escaping. It's in relation to the day of resurrection. It's a taqwini reality, yeah. It's a cause and effect reality, not something that we do optionally. Yawma yafirlo al-mar'o, the man, on that day, will escape what? Out of necessity, out of cause and effect, out of taqween, providentially, will escape what? Min achi. Escape, evade his brother. Brotherhood doesn't exist, as it does here. Wa umme, escape and evade one's mother. Wa abi, one's father. Wa sahibatihi, one's spouse. Wabani, one's sons, all this. Attachment to one's son, one's spouse. Mother, father. Qua mother, father, spouse, and everything. This attachment, and that day, you'll see it's all play. It was all diversion. It will become apparent to you in that realm of existence. It was all play here, but you were heedless. It was all play. All this attachment, all these certificates, education, this, that, in the seminaries, that you attached all your life to, you'll see, it was all nothing. It was all play. One of my ustads narrated this story, that he was passing by a market, bazaar, in Qom. It's called Gozara Khan. It's opposite the haram of Bibi Masuma alayhi wasalam. He saw a lot of sepah, the soldiers of the Revolutionary Guard, standing in line. It was a very long line. His curiosity led him to follow the line. It led to, after half a kilometer, or maybe less, it led to Ayatollah Bahjat's mosque. So he went inside the mosque. And there were a lot of guards there, because Ayatollah Bahjat, Rahmatullahi, was having a session with the Sepahis, the Revolutionary Guard, and other factions of the army, maybe the Marines and others. He told the guards, is it okay if we go in? And he went in. When he went in, Ayatollah Bahjat was about to leave. And this was Ayatollah Bahjat's last statement to them. He said, all this is khiyalat. It's all diversion and play. It's all imaginary. These labels you're wearing, this hierarchy in the Marines, the army, all this is just imaginary. These are arbitrary. And everyone will know it's imaginary one day. But we have to appreciate this here, because we're drowned in this arbitrary life. The certificate's important, the wife, poor wife, the husband, poor husband, the son, mother, so on and so forth. Don't get me wrong, all these are important. Depends on your worldview, how you look at it though. When you look at your son, poor son, it's all a waste of time. Everything that you're doing, if that is the way you're looking at it, it's my duty to be frank here on the Mamba. I don't want to play around with you. I want you to learn something. In some ways, have some responsibility. You've 10, 20 people are here. You've come here for a purpose. I want to just explain these so that your aqibat, your fate, be of a good one. Don't get attached to this arbitrary lifestyle. It's all khiyalat. Drowned in khiyalat. Because that, when you look at it in that way, be the certificate, qua certificate, not qua Allah, the son, not qua Allah, the mother, qua mother, not qua Allah, the father of the mother, all these things, qua themselves, not Allah, they're non-existent. They don't exist. Yes, the mother, son, certificate, they all exist. Qua Allah. But when you look in life, is you're looking and attached and you have an affinity towards it, that's non-existent. We'll go through the verse in the Holy Quran. It's a mirage. It's a mirage. When you get there, you find out it was a mirage. And when you get to Qiyamah, where it manifests before you, you'll see all your life, it was just a mirage. And that's going to be painful. Even in relation to Adam and Eve, alayhi as-salam, here the text in some traditions, it uses abawain. Now that's also a delicate point. Yes, abawain can refer to a genetic mother and father, even though walidain is more precise. And then we see traditions where abawain is used. So here suddenly we see scholars questioning legitimately here. Now wait a minute. Here, abawain, there may be another meaning here. In chapter 4, the opening verse, your ayyuhannas, O people, ittaqu rabbakum, have taqwa before your Lord, alladhi, your Lord, who khalaqakum, who created you, min nafsin wahida, from a single substance, wa khalaqa minha, and then created minha. If to be precise, the translation would be from the same genus of that substance, the same material, then created from that same material, from that substance, zawjaha, its spouse. Wa batha minhuma, then scattered from those two. Now those two, doesn't specify Adam and Eve. Speaking in general terms here, which covers all people though. Scattered from those two, rajalan, men, kathiran, wa nisaa, numerous men and women, numerous. Doesn't say all men and women. If some scholars like Al-Ghamid Tabatabai says in this cycle, this present cycle of humans, which started with Adam and Eve, alayhim as-salam, everyone are descendants of that Adam and Eve. A And then when it comes to the question of, well, how did the brothers and sisters, how did the next generation come? He says, yes, they intermarried a long time ago. He says it was a necessity, and then there was no Sharia then, it's okay. And then after the next generation, then the Sharia came, it became haram. One generation doesn't do any harm. But some like Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh only say no. This incest, whether it's the Sharia says or not, it's not an arbitrary thing. It's based on realities. Incest is against the fitra, as we explained last night. Fitra, that meaning. So Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh only says it's impossible that brothers and sisters could marry under Allah's command. Impossible. This verse, although I don't want to push you in any direction here, I may personally believe in Allah Ta'ala Tamwis, but I'm just wondering what Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh, Hafidhahullah, is saying. Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh is a very important figure now in Iran. I think he's very ill. We pray for his shafa. But he's one of the very strong scholars. It's narrated from Allama Tabatabawi that Allama Tabatabawi says, Hassan Zadeh, only the 12th Imam knows him, who he is. Allama Tabatabawi is saying this. And the earth upon which Hassan Zadeh only walks upon, I would use as my surah. This has been narrated from two different sources. Although it's still difficult to believe that Allah Ta'ala has said such a thing. I myself am not 100% sure. But from this statement, it shows that there's some importance here he's attached to Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh only. Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh doesn't accept that picture of Adam and Eve, that we're all descendants. In the verse it says, وَبَثَ مِنْهُمَا رَجُولًا كَثِيرًا وَنِسَاءً. Numerous men and women scattered from those two. And then those two didn't mention each and every one of us. Yes, we originate from a couple. But whether it was Adam and Eve, we don't know, according to Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh's opinion. He says Adam and Eve were the first couple. Ayatollah Hassan didn't accept that. At the same time, there were other couples created like Adam and Eve. But Adam and Eve were important. And Adam was the prophet. And then their children married. And the creation of Adam is just a code that there are other creations like that which happened to. So we all do. Our origins lie in one father and one mother. But whether it's the same mother and father, or two brothers and sisters, he can't accept them, brothers and sisters lying. Anyway, the point was, here, in relation to Adam and Eve, the word Ab is used. And it doesn't have to mean the genetic mother and father. It can mean one or the other, like mentors, guides, and so on and so forth. I'm not sure how long we have. I wanted to mention something on the side, like Musiba, with your permission. So I'll stop here for now. Yeah, although it's not Musiba technically, it's an important point I want to mention here. In one of the social media of a particular scholar, I won't mention the name, and I won't mention if it's male or female, or it's Iranian or non-Iranian, British speaking or non-British speaking, a scholar who's a respectable scholar, said something which was not very respectable. In one of the social media, he said, that Rumi, the famous Sufi, Muslim Sufi, who is known as a poet, but he was a faqih, he was a theologian, he was a jurisprudent, he was an ethicist, he was an arif. But since he was known for his poems, that's all we know him by. It's one of the oppressions that has happened before these people. And that's why Allame Tabatabai, he had written many poems. Only two or three of us, he threw them all in the river. And he didn't want to be known as a poet, because it could affect his other writings. Hafiz, Sa'di, Rumi, these are important people. These are important. And their importance lie in the fact of portraying the teachings of the Qur'an and Ahlul Bayt in a very particular manner. These are important. This person, scholar, said that Rumi shamelessly declares that, then he quotes Rumi, and the quote is book 3, page 232. And he says that Rumi says, "Do not be like Hussein, who went to Karbala blindly." It's a very bad statement. Rumi didn't say that, but he's assuming, or she is assuming, that Rumi said that. If Rumi would have said that, yes, that's a very, it's a catastrophic statement. You can't compromise with the stature, with the holiness and sanctity of Imam Hussein, alayhi salam. Do not be like Hussein. That in itself is blasphemous. He's our model, he's everything for us. And then, why don't we like Hussein? Because Hussein went to Karbala blindly. You see, blasphemy upon blasphemy. And he or she, this scholar, put it on the social media, and people, they accepted, because the scholar was a respectable scholar. He's not a scholar that lies. The scholar is a respectable one, but he quotes Rumi and then puts it, or misquotes Rumi, and then puts it on social media, and people believe it. And then some people there, they contacted me, said, "Is this true?" Without even researching the matter, when I emailed them back, I said, "This is definitely a misquote." Without even before investigating it. Because those who study Rumi, those who study Irfan, they know there's no separation between these people, their teachings, and the Ahlul Bayt. Wow. It's a given. If some people fall into these dilemmas and fall into doubt, okay, that's their issue. But those who know about the field, have studied it, they know for sure. Because the name Hussein even never enters the Masnavi. This is book 3, page 232. This name Hussein, in which de Montaigne, doesn't even enter the Masnavi. And he says, Rumi says, "Do not be like Hussein, who went to Karbala blindly." So what's the story behind this? It's quite a long story, I'll just cut it short. That this has its origins in people who are fabricating Rumi. And they want to portray Rumi as a deviant, and portray Sufism as a form of deviance. And actually there, in that social media, heretic, deviance appeared in the tags. Here, this has a story behind it. there's a verse or a couplet that they've fabricated. That fabrication reads as follows. Kul kulane nalo dar karbala ta nayufti chon Hussein and darbala. Don't proceed blindly to Karbala so that you don't fall into burden like Hussein. This is the fabricated couplet. But this doesn't exist in any of the original copies of Masnavi. You won't find this anywhere. This is how the enemy works. The original couplet reads as follows. Heen mado gostar dar dashte bala. Be aware. Don't run shamelessly in the valley of burden. Heen madon kurane ander karbala. Be aware. Don't ride blindly to Karbala. That's it. That's the couplet. There's nothing about don't be like Hussein, as the scholar suggested. There's nothing like don't be like Hussein who went blindly to Karbala. A Shia scholar shouldn't even mention this. Now, although we say to the scholar and those like him, don't worry. Rumi the Orif, being belonging to the Orafo school, he forgives you. Because the Orafo forgive. They believe in absolute forgiveness in one-to-ones. Others may not be as forgiving. You've made a mistake, a shortcoming, but don't worry. He won't hold you in the hereafter. Because he's an Orif. You've attacked the right person, albeit for the wrong reasons. But what's this story then? What does Rumi, is he intending? That beware, don't go blindly to the valley of Karbala. What's all this about? Don't shamelessly go to the valley of burden. What does it mean? It is in relation to what happened in Karbala. History records that in the beginning, hundreds of people accompanied Imam Hussein on the route to Karbala because they thought that he's looking for governance, for power. People wanted a share of that power. They said, oh, he's going to get to what he wants. Let's go with Hussein, alayhi salam. And then we'll have a share of that power. And they shamelessly accompanied Imam Hussein on his route towards Karbala. It is shameless. It wasn't for the Imam's sake. It wasn't for Allah's sake. They wanted power, they wanted money, they wanted prestige. That's shamelessly going to the valley of burden. Be aware of this. They're only looking for those that khiyalat, that went to the Bajat said. The arbitrary things, power, prestige. It's all arbitrary in the hereafter. As they were approaching nearer and nearer, they said, wait a minute. It seems that the Imam is really taking his family, his wives and children. He's taking all these with him. This was a question mark for them. Then as it progressed, when they saw the Imam refusing the help of the jinn came and said, we'll defeat all the enemy for you. Imam said, no. No. Patience. I've been commanded towards patience. People were seeing this. It was difficult. Those people who came because of power, for ungodly reasons. When they saw this, they went away. They shamelessly came to the valley of burden. They went away. They said, no, this is another story. This is another setting here. Not what we were thinking, that he's looking for governance. He's not going to defeat that army with a few people. The angels came, offered their help, and the mom said no. More and more people left. Don't go shamelessly to the valley of burden. Don't ride blindly to Karbala. But those 72 people, Allahu Akbar, they did it solely for Allah. There was no prestige, honor, power. This was only for Allah's sake. This is difficult for me and you to understand. Maybe not possible for many people to understand. But some events happened during the Iran-Iraq war that, I'll just give you one example of these events. These people who went to a war from Iran, they would wear a metallic label so that when they were killed, they would be identified. In Farsi, they call it a plaque. Then, these people, on the night of operations, this has been told to me directly from a war veteran. In the night of operations, the group would gather, they would take the plaque, and then they would bury it somewhere before going the next morning to the operations. When you ask them why, they said, we don't want to be identified. You see, if we become martyred, if we become killed, it's for Allah's sake. And we don't even want to be identified. And then they say, we're doing this for the 72 who died at the cause of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. They were the models for these people. Because sometimes someone becomes a martyr, although I'm generalizing here, and the plaque is still on them. When they are taken after they're excavated and found, when they're taken, everyone knows who they are. It's true, they're in the hereafter, but still there's an attachment to the world. But those who have taken away the metallic label, they'll never be found. And even in the hereafter, there's no attachment in this world for them. They're annihilated in Allah, solely for Allah, the eliminator.